At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Story number one. Something happened with me a few years back, and it has stayed with me in ways I can't explain. I was a high schooler then, working a part-time job after school to save up some money. My routine was simple. Finish work at 10:30, walk a bit, and catch the bus home. It was always the same bus, same driver, same route. The routine gave me comfort. That night, though, I was running late. I barely made it in time and hopped onto the last bus at 11 p.m. The bus was unusually empty, but that didn't strike me as odd. It was late, after all. I sat near the middle, headphones in, staring out the window as the city lights blurred past. When the bus reached my stop, I stepped off like always. But immediately, something felt wrong. The place where I usually got down was never empty. There were usually small stalls still open, drunk college kids laughing too loud, the occasional dog nosing through trash. The air usually carried the hum of life, distant car horns, chatter, music spilling from shops. But that night it was dead silent. Not the kind of quiet street silence, but the heavy kind where the absence of sound itself presses down on you. No people, no animals, not even the rustle of leaves. The bus pulled away, leaving me standing there. I tried to shake it off and started walking down the familiar street. That's when it hit me. The smell. Acrid, harsh, unmistakable. Burnt wood, plastic, and something else. Something foul. Like charred meat. I froze mid-step. The smell grew stronger until my nose burned. My eyes watered. And then, I saw it. Flames. Tall, raging, swallowing the buildings in front of me. The fire roared upward, windows bursting, walls collapsing. Heat hit my skin even though I wasn't close. For a second, I couldn't breathe. Then, nothing. The street was dark again. No flames, no smoke, no smell. Just cold air and silence. I told myself it had to be exhaustion or my imagination messing with me after a long day. I forced myself to keep walking. The sound of my shoes against the pavement echoed unnaturally loud. Then after a few steps, I noticed something that made my stomach twist. Footsteps, not mine, a second pair. Perfectly in rhythm, but slightly behind. I stopped. The footsteps stopped. I started again, quickening my pace. They followed, keeping the same distance. I turned around fast, heart hammering, but the street behind me was empty. That's when I noticed him. At the next turn, sitting slumped on the edge of the pavement, there was a man. At least I thought it was a man. He was rocking slightly, muttering something under his breath, words I couldn't catch. His clothes were torn, blackened, and covered in ash. His posture was wrong, too limp, like his bones weren't holding him up properly. I hesitated but moved a little closer, squinting to see him under the dim streetlight. The muttering grew clearer. It wasn't random. It was the same phrase repeated over and over. Something about burning, burning it all down. That's when he turned his head just slightly, and I caught a glimpse of his face, or what was left of it. The skin was dark and warped, patches missing entirely, teeth exposed through melted flesh. His eye, at least the one that was still there, looked clouded, wet, and unfocused. The smell of rot hit me so hard I gagged. I don't remember making a conscious choice. My legs just bolted. I sprinted down the street, not daring to look back, not listening to whether footsteps followed anymore. My chest burned, lungs screaming, but I didn't stop until I saw headlights ahead. A bus. I stood there gasping, half crying, and flagged it down. The doors opened, and I jumped in without even checking the route. Only when I sat down did it hit me. There wasn't supposed to be another bus. That was the last one. I sat frozen, staring at the dark windows, waiting for something, anything to happen. But the ride was uneventful. I got off at the next station closer to my house and walked the rest of the way home. That night I didn't sleep. Every time I shut my eyes, I saw flames, or that face, or heard the sound of footsteps behind me. The next morning, I forced myself to go back to the station, just to prove to myself I had imagined it all. But what I found there didn't make sense. The place looked like a ruin. Buildings collapsed, blackened walls still standing here and there, cars left rusting with melted glass. The air reeked of old ash. Dust clung to everything. It was like no one had stepped foot there in weeks. I asked around later, and what I learned chilled me more than anything. The station had been burned down. Not last night. Not last week. A full month ago. A massive fire tore through the area. They said the official story was a gas leak, but no one knew for sure. Some people died in it too, trapped inside buildings that collapsed before firefighters arrived. I tried to make sense of what happened. Maybe I fell asleep on the bus and dreamt the whole thing. Maybe the driver took a wrong turn, and I ended up in some abandoned part of the city without realizing it. Maybe the fatigue of work and school was just messing with my brain. But there are still a few things that keep me awake sometimes, even now. I never told anyone about the man I saw. The one sitting on the pavement, muttering about burning. The one with half a face. But a few weeks after, I overheard two older guys talking about the fire. One of them mentioned a man who had been pulled out almost alive, sitting near the station entrance when rescuers arrived. They also said witnesses swore he kept repeating the same words over and over. Something about burning it all down. I don't know what happened to me that night. I don't know if I slipped into some half-dream state, if my brain stitched stories together from things I'd overheard, or if I somehow stepped into a place I shouldn't have. All I know is sometimes when I'm out late and walking home, I still catch that smell. Faint, but sharp enough to stop me in my tracks. Burnt plastic, burnt wood, and something worse beneath it. And every time I find myself listening for footsteps. Story number two. This happened a couple years ago in New York, and even now I keep replaying the night in my head, asking myself if I was overtired, or hallucinating, or if the stress of the city just got to me. It started with something stupid. Just the desperate need to pee. Anyone who's ever ridden the subway in NYC knows it can be a nightmare. Bathrooms are rare, and when they do exist, you don't want to use them. But that night I didn't have a choice. I was riding the express, late, almost midnight. The train suddenly got rerouted at Times Square. Everyone shuffled out, annoyed. I was more focused on the pressure in my bladder. When I stepped off, I spotted a sign I'd never noticed before. White lettering on green, with a little arrow pointing down. Restrooms. It struck me as odd. I'd used Times Square Station countless times. I thought I knew all its nooks. But in that moment, I was too desperate to question it. I followed the sign down two levels. The further I went, the stranger it got. The usual chaotic station noise faded with each step, replaced by silence. The walls shifted from white tile to pale green. Cracked and stained in spots like a part of the station frozen in time. By the time I reached the bottom, I realized I hadn't passed anyone. No late-night workers, no stragglers, not even rats. Just silence, broken by the faint buzz of a dying fluorescent bulb. At the end of the hallway was the restroom. The door was half open, the only light inside flickering from a single fluorescent strip. It smelled of rust and mildew. The stalls looked ancient. Metal rusted around the latches, doors hanging unevenly. The floor was sticky in places. And then there was the man. He stood at the cracked mirror above the sinks, dressed in dingy overalls. His skin looked gray under the buzzing light. He wasn't doing anything, just standing there, staring at his own reflection, lips stretched in a wide grin. He didn't move, didn't even blink. At first I figured he was high, or just another strange New Yorker. I avoided him and went into a stall. Inside, I kept telling myself to hurry. But when I was about to leave, something made my stomach turn. On the inside of the stall door, faint but visible in the flickering light, were dark stains. They hadn't been there when I went in. Thin spatters, reddish-brown, like blood sprayed across the metal. Some even flecked near the handle, as though someone had tried to push out with bloody fingers. I froze. For a long second, I just stared. Feeling my heart kick against my ribs. Then I yanked the door open. The man at the mirror hadn't moved. Same posture, same grin. But in the warped glass, his reflection almost looked more real than he did, like the reflection had more weight than the person. His teeth seemed too sharp in the mirror. Too many. I didn't wait. I bolted for the stairwell. That's when the real panic hit. Where the stairs had been was nothing but smooth, tiled wall. No doorway, no steps leading up. Just flat green tile, like there had never been an opening at all. I ran my hands over it, pushing, searching for a seam. Nothing. Cold tile all the way across. I turned back to...
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Toward the restroom. The man was still grinning, but now I noticed something worse. In the mirror, his reflection had turned its head slightly, like it was watching me. His body in the room stayed perfectly still, but his reflection wasn't in sync anymore. I shouted at him, desperate, but he didn't react. Not a flinch. Not even a blink. He just kept grinning while his reflection seemed more and more alive. There was nowhere else to go. No exits, no signage. Just the mirror man, the flickering light, and the tiled wall where the stairs had vanished. My hands were shaking. My breathing got ragged. Finally, I pressed my forehead against the cold tile wall, shut my eyes, and just wished, begged, that the stairs would be there when I opened them again. The chill seeped into my skin. For a second, I thought I heard something on the other side of the wall. Muffled footsteps, faint voices, like people passing above me. And then, when I opened my eyes, the wall was gone. The stairwell was back, complete with the chipped railing and familiar dirty steps. Noise from the station poured in all at once. Shouts, announcements, the roar of trains. I didn't look back. I sprinted up the steps and back into the chaos of Times Square Station. Heart hammering like I'd run a marathon. People brushed past me, annoyed, but I barely noticed. When I finally caught my breath above ground, I told myself it had to be a trick of the mind. Maybe I'd stumbled into some disused maintenance corridor, and panic made me imagine things. Maybe the blood on the stall door was rust and bad lighting. Maybe the man was just some cracked-out guy who happened to look strange in the flicker. That's what I've tried to believe. But here's the thing. The next day I went back. I retraced my steps looking for that restroom sign. Nothing. I searched the whole station, checked every level I could reach. No pale green tiling, no forgotten corridor, no restroom. Over the next few weeks, I went back multiple times, determined to prove to myself it was real, or that it wasn't. But every time the same result. The sign was gone, and so was the stairwell that had led me down. I even asked an MTA worker once if there were old restrooms below. He just shrugged and said, "Not anymore. Not for decades." Still, I can't shake what I saw. The stains on the stall door. The missing stairs. That man's reflection, grinning just a little too wide. Sometimes I wonder if anyone else has ever found that place, or if it only shows up for certain people, at certain times. I don't know. What I do know is this. Whenever I'm in Times Square Station now, I avoid wandering too far from the crowds, and I never ever follow signs I don't remember being there before, because I can't stop thinking, what if next time the wall doesn't turn back into stairs? Story number 3. When my grandma passed away last year, I was the one stuck with cleaning out her old farmhouse. It was out in the middle of nowhere, surrounded by overgrown fields and woods that seemed to press in closer every year. The house itself was 100 years old, easy, and it felt every bit of its age. The floor sagged, the wallpaper peeled, and every corner smelled faintly of mildew mixed with dust. The basement was the worst part. I always hated it as a kid. My cousins and I used to dare each other to go down there, but none of us ever lasted more than a few minutes. It wasn't finished, just dirt floors, low ceilings, and wooden beams that looked like they could splinter at any second. On my second day of cleaning, I went down to the basement with a flashlight. Most of the boxes were filled with useless junk, rusty tools, canning jars, stacks of newspapers. But on the far side of the room, behind a sagging shelf, I noticed a patch of paneling that didn't look like the rest. It was darker, rotted in places, and slightly warped. Something about it didn't fit. I pushed at it, and the panel gave way with a brittle snap. Behind it was a door, not a full-sized one, but a narrow wood frame thing I had never seen before. Here's the part that made no sense. When I opened it, there was a staircase, but not leading down, it was going up. This was impossible. My grandma's house was one story. There was no upstairs. The roof slanted low, and the attic wasn't even accessible from the inside. Still, the curiosity was stronger than the unease. I stepped through. The stairs were steep, almost vertical, with wooden planks that creaked under my weight. My flashlight flickered like it was low on batteries, though I'd replaced them that morning. About halfway up, it sputtered and died. I had to feel my way in the dark, one hand sliding along the wall, which was clammy and strangely soft, like it had moisture trapped inside. When I finally reached the top, I found myself in a cramped attic I'd never known existed. The air was thick and stale, almost syrupy with the smell of mold. My eyes adjusted slowly, and I made out shapes. Old wooden trunks, stacks of warped books, toys scattered like they'd been abandoned mid-play decades ago. In the center of the room was a wooden cradle. It was small, hand-carved, with peeling white paint and a thin, yellowed blanket inside. For a second, I thought my eyes were playing tricks. But no, the cradle was rocking, back and forth, just slightly with a faint creak. There was no wind, no open windows. I froze. The air felt heavier, as if the room itself was pressing down on me. Then, in the dust coating the floor, I noticed small footprints, bare feet, tiny ones leading away from the cradle, across the room. I followed them with my eyes. They went toward the far corner, and then, impossibly, they started going up. The prints continued up the wall, each one pressed clear into the dust until they disappeared into the ceiling. My heart was hammering so hard it hurt. I tilted my head back. Hanging there, upside down from the ceiling, was a doll. It wasn't suspended by rope or wire. It was just there, clinging like some insect. Its porcelain face was cracked, and its glass eyes, cloudy and sunken, stared straight at me. I bolted. I didn't even think. I just scrambled back toward the stairs, tripping over a pile of books, scraping my shin, but not stopping. I half slid, half fell down the staircase until I tumbled through the door. Except I wasn't in the basement anymore. I stumbled outside. My knees hit damp grass. I was behind the house in the overgrown backyard. Right in front of me was the collapsed swing set from my childhood, the one my cousins and I had been forbidden to play on because it was rusted through. The door was gone. The staircase was gone. Behind me was just the house's cracked foundation wall. I don't remember how long I sat there, trying to catch my breath, trying to make sense of it. Eventually, I forced myself back inside. The basement was exactly as it had been. The rotted paneling was still there, but behind it was only dirt wall. No door, no stairs. I tried to brush it off as some weird trick of the house, some architectural oddity. Maybe I'd gotten turned around in the dark. Maybe my brain filled in the blanks. Stress, exhaustion, grief, it all piles up. That's what I told myself. But the house didn't stop after that. Every night I stayed there, I heard noises in the walls, scratching, like small hands dragging across the plaster. Sometimes I'd wake up to the sound of something faintly rocking, though there was no furniture that could make that noise. Once I walked into the kitchen and found a trail of tiny dirt footprints across the floor, leading to the back door. I didn't even have pets. The last night I spent there, I woke up freezing. My blanket had slipped off, but that wasn't what made me sit upright. My bed was rocking, not shifting because of me, rocking like the cradle, slow, deliberate. I moved out the next day. When I told my cousins, they laughed it off, saying the farmhouse was just creepy and that I'd freaked myself out. Maybe they're right. Maybe I let my imagination run wild in an old, unfamiliar space. But there are details I can't explain away. Like the books I found stacked neatly in the attic. They weren't there when I checked the basement again. But a week later, when I opened one of the boxes I'd hauled out, those same moldy books were sitting on top of the pile. I never packed them. or the doll. I've tried to forget it, but every so often when I'm half asleep, I swear I see its cracked face in the corner of my room, just watching. I tell myself it's just my brain playing tricks, leftover fear from that night. But sometimes when the house is silent, I hear faint rocking, and it always comes from the ceiling. Story number four. This one night still makes my chest tighten when I think about it. It happened last summer at a carnival my boyfriend and I went to. It was the usual stuff: bright lights, fried food smells, the constant screams from roller coasters and rides. I remember the sky was dimming, that weird in-between stage where the sun's still faintly glowing, but everything else feels like it's slipping into night. My boyfriend insisted on trying the funhouse. I wasn't thrilled about it, especially with the timing. Funhouses in daylight feel goofy, harmless. But funhouses in the dark? They sit wrong with me. Still, I didn't want to kill the mood, so I went along. When we stepped inside, I expected neon lights or mirror-lined hallways. Instead, the moment we crossed the entrance flap, it was pitch black. Not even the faint glow from outside followed us in. I laughed nervously and asked where the lights were, but there was nothing. No answer from him either, just a heavy silence. I reached for his hand and squeezed it, but he stayed quiet. The air felt colder inside, like walking into a damp basement. I called out his name louder, but he didn't respond. Then there was a faint flicker, like a dying fluorescent bulb. For just a split second, I saw something that still makes my stomach knot. A clown standing where my boyfriend should have been. Pale face, smudged red paint around the mouth, hollow eyes staring down at me. Its arm brushed mine, and then darkness swallowed it all again. The light came back seconds later, fully this time. I felt relief, but my boyfriend was gone. No one was standing there at all. I started moving forward, hoping to bump into him. The funhouse didn't look right. The walls weren't painted bright or covered in mirrors like you'd expect. Some spots had warped mirrors, but every time I tried to really focus on them, they dissolved into plain walls. When I stepped closer to test, I nearly face-planted against solid, cold surfaces where I swore reflections had just been. The smell in there wasn't carnival-like either. It wasn't popcorn or funnel cake anymore. It was musty, like wet carpet and old wood left to rot. I spotted an exit sign glowing red in the distance, but no matter how far I walked, it stretched farther away. My footsteps echoed unnaturally loud. I looked back at one point and froze. The clown was there again, just standing, but this time it wasn't empty-handed. It was holding an axe, its head tilted like it was curious. Before I could process, it charged. My legs moved on instinct. I dodged as I felt a sharp rush of air near my side, like the blade really did swing past me. My chest burned as I sprinted harder than I thought possible. Somehow the exit sign came closer in that moment. I grabbed the handle of the door beneath it, yanked it open, and stumbled through. And then, just like that, I was sitting in the passenger seat of my boyfriend's car. The radio was on low. The hum of the engine was steady. My boyfriend was driving calmly like nothing had happened. I panicked, asked him about the funhouse, about what just happened. He gave me this long look, almost pitying, and said there wasn't a funhouse at the carnival. He told me we'd left nearly an hour ago, that I'd zoned out in the car. For a moment, I thought maybe he was right. Maybe I'd fainted, or maybe my brain had played tricks on me inside a tent. But when I shifted uncomfortably in my seat, my eyes caught something in the back. Sitting on the floor behind me was a wig, cheap-looking, stringy, with faded red strands curled at the ends. It looked almost exactly like the clown's hair. I didn't say a word about it. That night I barely slept. Every creak in the apartment made me jolt awake. My mind kept replaying the moment the axe nearly grazed me, the weird stretch of the hallway, the warped mirrors that weren't mirrors. The worst was the silence of it all. Carnivals are loud. There should have been laughter or screams from kids outside filtering in, but inside that place there was nothing. Over the next few days, I brought it up casually with my boyfriend. He stuck with the same story: no funhouse. He laughed it off, said maybe I confused it with the mirror maze at a different fair we'd gone to earlier that year. I wanted to believe him, but that wig. A week later, I checked the carnival's website out of curiosity. No listing for a funhouse. There was a haunted house attraction, but it was closed for repairs, and definitely no clowns with axes advertised. Skeptically, I tried to reason it out. Maybe I had a stress-induced blackout, and my mind filled in the gaps with my own fears. Maybe the wig in the car was just some prop left over from his younger sister's costume stuff, but when I asked about it, he said he didn't know what I was talking about. By the time I looked again, it was gone. The memory hasn't faded, though. Sometimes I'll catch reflections in glass looking warped, stretched like those disappearing mirrors. Sometimes when I'm walking in dim places, I get the sense that the exit signs flicker just a little too far away, like they don't want me reaching them. The worst part is, every so often, when I close my eyes to fall asleep, I feel the same rush of air near my side, as if a blade is swinging by me again. I wake up sweating, convinced I'm back in that hallway. I've told myself over and over that it wasn't real, that brains can play cruel tricks, especially in dark places with stress and fear mixed in. That's what any skeptic would say, right? But here's the thing I can't shake. If none of it was real, how do I explain the cold brush of something solid against my arm before the clown appeared? How do I explain the wig in the back seat? And why, whenever I get into my boyfriend's car now, do I sometimes swear I smell that same damp, rotting scent from inside the funhouse? Story number 5. I was driving to my sister's retreat house one Friday evening, planning to stay the weekend. The place was in a small town that barely showed up on maps. My GPS worked fine until the moment I entered the town border. The arrow just froze in place, spinning without direction. I wasn't too worried, because my sister had already told me the way. She said it was on Street 10, second turn after the main road. At first, everything looked normal. A sleepy town, quiet streets, a gas station with its neon sign buzzing. But when I took the turn toward Street 10, something shifted. The road narrowed in a way that felt off, like it was closing in. Houses were sparse, just dark shapes hunched at odd angles. None of them had porch lights on, and the street lights above flickered weakly, then went completely dark. I had to slow down, headlights carving tunnels through the shadows. The whole neighborhood had this hollow feel, as if it wasn't lived in. No sound of TV through windows, no kids playing, no dogs barking. It wasn't even late, maybe 8 p.m., but it looked like the place had been abandoned for years. I finally spotted my sister's house. At least I thought it was hers. Same number she had given me, same little front porch, but the windows were pitch black, and she hated the dark. I'd never seen her spend even a single evening without every light blazing. The door was slightly ajar. My stomach tightened. I pushed it open, half expecting someone to slam it back in my face. The inside was quiet, too quiet. I turned on my flashlight, the beam trembling across the living room. Furniture looked right, but everything was off somehow. Like copies of real objects, just a bit too stiff, too clean. When I reached the kitchen, my sister was there, standing at the counter, chopping vegetables. The sound of the knife against the cutting board echoed strangely, sharp and metallic. She didn't look at me, didn't say a word, just kept slicing, each movement perfectly identical, like a looped video. I froze, watching her shoulders rise and fall in a rhythm that didn't feel human. She finally spoke, flat and cold, telling me to go upstairs to my room. My skin prickled because the house didn't have an upstairs, at least not the last time I visited. Still, my legs moved before my brain caught up. I found a narrow staircase I swore wasn't there before, leading upward. When I reached the top, it wasn't a bedroom. It was a long hallway, stretching unnaturally far. The floor was littered with nails scattered like someone had dumped a bucket, rusted, sharp, covering the entire path. My flashlight shook as I swept the beam along the walls. The paint seemed to ripple, almost like something underneath was breathing. The air was heavy, damp, and smelled faintly metallic, like blood and wet iron. I didn't dare step further. I turned around, heart hammering, and went back down to the kitchen. But it was empty. No sign of my sister, no knife, no vegetables. The cutting board was clean, not a single mark on it. I stood there, my own breath sounding too loud, when I heard footsteps above me, slow, deliberate, dragging. But the ceiling groaned like the weight was too heavy, like something larger than a person was moving. Then, bang, a sharp, crushing pain exploded in the back of my head, and everything went black. I woke up in the morning on the couch, sunlight spilling through the windows. My sister came out of the kitchen, cheerful, normal. She told me I had arrived early morning, must have been exhausted, and passed out on the couch right after. I didn't remember that at all. My last memory was the bang. I went outside trying to shake off the nausea in my stomach. The neighborhood looked completely different. Clean, normal. Houses had their porch lights, people were out watering lawns, even kids riding bikes. No dark emptiness, no dead streetlights. When I asked my sister later about Street 10, she gave me a confused look. She said the town only had 8 streets. I showed her the directions she'd texted me, but when I pulled out my phone, the message was gone. The thread had nothing about Street 10. It just read, "Second turn past the main road, house with the porch." I kept my mouth shut after that. The rest of the weekend was fine on the surface, but I couldn't shake the unease. Every time I stepped outside, I found myself counting the streets, tracing the layout of the town. 8, always 8. And yet, when I drove back home, my GPS froze again at the same spot where it had the night before. For a second, I swear I saw the sign. Street 10 arrow right. Then it flickered and the sign was gone. Even now, weeks later, I can't get the image of my sister at the counter out of my head. The blank face, the mechanical chopping. I keep asking myself whether I dreamed it, maybe hit my head on the doorway and imagined everything. But sometimes when I'm cooking late at night, I catch myself slicing vegetables in that same perfect, looping rhythm. And for a moment, it doesn't feel like me holding the knife. Story number 6. It's been 2 years, but I still don't know what really happened to me inside that asylum. Sometimes I convince myself it was just stress, maybe a breakdown from everything going on, but the other half of me knows what I saw, what I felt. I can't dismiss it, no matter how much I try. Back then, my marriage was falling apart. My wife was seeing someone else, though she never admitted it directly. When I confronted her, she flipped the narrative, claimed I'd been behaving erratically, paranoid, unstable. The next thing I knew, I was being admitted to the mental asylum in our town. The paperwork said I was a danger to myself, but I knew it was a lie. I kept telling the staff I was fine, that I didn't need to be there. No one listened. The first few nights inside, I tried to keep my head down, hoping it would clear up. But the night it happened, I couldn't sleep. The fluorescent bulbs outside my room buzzed constantly, like a swarm of insects inside my skull. I thought maybe walking around would calm me down. Maybe I'd even find some way to sneak out. The hospital was strangely silent. No footsteps, no voices, just that low electric hum and the occasional creak of pipes in the walls. As I wandered, I noticed how the corridors felt stretched, like they didn't match the outside of the building. I don't know if it was the dim lighting or my own exhaustion, but it felt like the place had more hallways than it should. I ended up on the last floor, one I'd never been on before. The bulbs flickered, barely lighting the hallway. I kept moving, even though every instinct told me to turn back. Then I saw her, a nurse pushing a patient in a wheelchair toward the far end. Something about her movements was off. Too stiff, too slow. Before I could call out, the lights went out completely. For maybe 3 seconds, I was standing in pitch blackness. When they flickered back on, the nurse and the patient were gone. Just gone. All that was left was the wheelchair, standing in the middle of the hallway facing me. My chest tightened. I don't know why I didn't just walk away, but I stood there, frozen. Then I felt something wet under my slipper. I looked down and saw a dark liquid spreading across the floor. At first I thought it was water, but the smell hit me. It was blood, thick, metallic. It was flowing from the bottom of a locked room nearby. I turned back, thinking of running, but the wheelchair was no longer at the end of the hall. It was right behind me now. I swear I felt air shift across my neck, like someone brushing past me. A shadow darted at the far end, too fast for me to make out. But my body reacted before my mind did. I stumbled backward and landed on the wheelchair. That's when it started moving. It wasn't me pushing it. The chair lurched forward like something was pulling it, rolling too fast to stop. I tried to get off, but it was like invisible hands pinned me down. The wheels screeched as the chair shot forward, faster and faster. My heart pounded so hard I thought it would burst. Ahead was a slope leading down to the lower levels. The chair didn't slow. It gained momentum. I screamed, but the sound seemed swallowed by the walls. No one came. The whole asylum felt empty. The last thing I remember was the blur of walls, the sound of rushing wheels, and the sharp slam of impact. When I opened my eyes, I was lying on the floor outside my own room. Blood was pooled around me, thick and warm, soaking into the cracks of the tiles. I sat up, trembling, trying to see where I was hurt. There was no pain. I checked my arms, my legs, my face. Nothing. Not a single scratch. But the blood was still there. I swear I touched it, sticky on my fingertips. I tried to ask the nurses the next morning, subtle questions, if they'd seen any blood in the hall, if I was injured during the night. They looked at me like I was crazy, said there was nothing, no incident, no blood. My body was clean when they checked me. The floor was spotless. Over the next few days, they ran more tests, and somehow the staff became convinced I'd been admitted under false pretenses. They discharged me. I thought it was over, that I'd go back to my life and put it behind me. But when I went home, things got stranger. My wife looked shocked to see me. She said I had been missing for a week, not admitted, not in the asylum, just gone. I told her everything, but she didn't believe me. She thought I was confused, maybe drunk, maybe wandering. But I knew what I'd lived through. It had felt too real. The unease kept me up at night. I couldn't let it go, so the next day I went back to the hospital. I needed proof. I needed to confirm what happened. The receptionist stared at me blankly when I asked about my admission. She told me they had no record of me. No paperwork, no files, nothing. They swore I'd never been admitted to their facility at all. I pushed harder, described the nurse I saw, the floor, the locked room. They told me the building had no such floor, that the last level of the hospital had been closed for years, sealed off after renovations. My mouth went dry. I left without arguing. I didn't know what else to do. That night I sat in my room replaying it over and over. Maybe my wife was right. Maybe I had wandered off, hallucinated everything out of guilt and stress. But if it was just my mind, how do I explain the details? The cold grip on my shoulders, the stench of blood, the way my slippers squelched in liquid that wasn't there the next day. And sometimes when the house is quiet and I'm alone, I hear it again. The faint buzz of hospital lights, and worse, the squeak of wheels rolling across the floor, stopping just outside my bedroom door. I've never dared open it when I hear that sound, because part of me knows the wheelchair's waiting. Story number 7. I was dog-sitting for an old college friend of mine. She lived in a quiet, suburban neighborhood, the kind with houses that all looked vaguely similar, but not enough to get confused. At least that's what I thought. She had gone on a week-long trip, and since I lived closer to the city, it was a small favor to stay at her place, take care of her golden retriever, and enjoy a bit of peace. The house was cozy, two stories, pale blue siding with white shutters, and a small fenced backyard. Nothing strange about it at first glance. My plan for the week was simple. Walk the dog, relax, maybe catch up on some work. The first night after feeding the dog, I decided to order takeout. I drove to pick it up since most delivery places didn't service that suburb. It was late, maybe 10:30 p.m., and the streets were darker than what I was used to. Hardly any streetlights, just pools of orange glow scattered far apart, the rest swallowed by shadows. On the way back, I pulled into what I thought was my friend's driveway. The same pale blue siding, same white shutters, same general outline. But when I looked up, something made my stomach drop. The curtains were drawn in every window. My friend never kept them drawn, and earlier that evening, I remembered leaving at least the downstairs lights off when I went out. Now the entire house glowed faintly, like it was lit from inside with too many bulbs. I sat there for a second with the engine running, staring. Then I saw it, a shape in the upstairs window, human height standing perfectly still, not moving, not tilting its head. Just there. I thought maybe I pulled into the wrong house. Easy mistake. I shifted into reverse. Except the driveway didn't end. The longer I backed up, the longer it seemed to stretch. My headlights lit up only gravel, like the car was moving backward but never gaining distance. The porch stayed just as far away as before, the glowing windows locked in place ahead. The dog in the back seat started barking, loud, panicked, his nails scratching against the seat. He lunged toward the window like he was trying to get out. My hands tightened on the wheel, and I pushed harder on the gas, reversing as fast as I dared. But the driveway just stretched and stretched. I flicked on the radio, half thinking maybe some sound would ground me. Static. Then beneath it, a humming. Slow, dragging, almost like a lullaby. Childish but wrong. Off-key, drawn out. Like someone trying to mimic how a child would hum, but failing. It didn't come from one speaker. It seemed to fill the whole car. My phone sitting in the cup holder buzzed with a burst of light. The screen glitched, flashing colors, freezing, then shutting itself off completely. No reboot, no nothing, just dead. The barking in the back got frantic. I could hear his teeth clacking as he snapped at nothing, his whole body thrashing against the door. I tried not to look back at the window, but something in my peripheral vision kept pulling my eyes upward. The shape was still there. Only now the curtains were slightly parted, as if two fingers had tugged them open just enough for something to watch me more clearly.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
The accelerator. The car roared backward. My stomach lurched. And then, without warning, I was back at the intersection on the main road, headlights shining down the empty street. The driveway, the house, the glowing windows. It was all gone, like it had never been there. My hands shook on the wheel. My knuckles looked filthy, covered in black grime, packed beneath the nails like I'd been clawing at soil. I stared at them in the glow of the dashboard, too stunned to move. I hadn't touched dirt. I'd only been driving. When I got back to the real house, the dog bolted inside the second I opened the car door. He ran straight upstairs and hid under the bed. I tried to calm myself by blaming exhaustion, stress, or some optical illusion. But when I walked past the front door, the mail slot rattled. Not like wind, but like someone tapping it lightly from outside. The following nights didn't feel right. The dog wouldn't sleep downstairs anymore. He'd curl up by the bedroom door, whining at odd hours. Around 3 a.m. each night, I'd wake up to faint scratching, like nails running down the outside of the house. Sometimes it came from the roof, sometimes the siding. Once, very clearly, from the window right beside my bed. I convinced myself it was tree branches, raccoons, something explainable. But then I noticed the siding. Each morning, faint streaks of dirt smeared down the walls, as if something had dragged filthy fingers across it. On the fourth night, I was brushing my teeth when the water pressure dropped suddenly. The faucet coughed, and instead of water, a thick black liquid seeped out for a few seconds. It looked like mud mixed with oil. It smelled faintly metallic, like blood. I left the bathroom light on all night after that. I kept telling myself I wouldn't look out the windows after dark, but sometimes curiosity won. And every time I did, the house across the street, empty, for sale, with a faded sign in the yard, had a light burning in the upstairs window. A single bulb, just one room glowing against the otherwise dark structure. No one ever went in or out. The mail piled up there too, but the light never turned off. By the sixth night, I was barely sleeping. My friend texted that she'd be back the next afternoon. I clung to that. Just one more night. But that last night, the humming came again. Not from the car radio this time, but from inside the house. Slow, dragging, tuneless. It seeped through the vents, vibrating faintly through the air ducts, as if the walls themselves were carrying it. The dog pressed his body against me, trembling so hard I could feel it through the mattress. I didn't sleep at all. When dawn broke, the humming stopped. The house felt normal again. When my friend came home, I didn't mention much beyond saying the dog had been nervous and that the water had acted up. She laughed it off. I didn't tell her about the driveway or the voice or the black grime still staining my nails no matter how hard I scrubbed. I just wanted to leave. It's been weeks since then, and sometimes when I'm driving at night, I'll see houses that look too similar. Same siding, same shutters, same glow in the upstairs window. I never pull into those driveways. I don't think I'd make it back twice, And even now, when everything is quiet, I'll catch myself humming without realizing it. Slow, off-key, childish. I don't remember ever learning that tune,